Carl, we have an interesting guest today. His name is Roger Stone, a former advisor to Richard Nixon. He is a New York Times best-selling author of The Man Who Killed Kennedy. And he says now, Carl, that the same forces who killed JFK twice tried to assassinate President Richard Nixon for the same reason, which is basically Vietnam and the establishment's bitter opposition to detente. His new book is called Nixon's Secrets. Roger Stone, welcome to Smith Sabatino.
I am delighted to be with you.
Same here. What is it about Nixon's secrets that you think will just surprise the heck out of everybody in America if they read it?
Well, I think there's two things, really. When Nixon was elected, of course, in 1968, I think the military-industrial complex, the CIA, the Joint Chiefs, Army Intelligence, really thought they were going to get the supreme hardliner. Here, finally, they had a president who would completely unfetter them in Vietnam and who would, pursue a hard line against the East. To their surprise, of course, Nixon's policies were far more peace-oriented. He accelerated the withdrawal of American troops from Vietnam. He did step up the bombing to give him the cover necessary to withdraw American troops, but he got our men out of there, bringing our involvement, direct involvement in the war, to an end. He also opened the door to China for multiple purposes, but among them to play the Chinese off against their Russian rivals in order to get deep arms control concessions from the Soviets. So I think it is pretty clear that the military didn't get what they were expecting. They began spying on Nixon as early as 1969. In a very celebrated case, a yeoman in working in the Naval Liaison Office in the White House was copying documents off of desks, out of files, out of burn bags, even went into Henry Kissinger's briefcase on one occasion, and getting those documents, those top secret documents on foreign policy, into the hands of the Joint Chiefs. So I document in my book that there were at least two aborted plans to assassinate Nixon, one in which there was an attempt to infiltrate a demonstration outside of his compound in Key Biscayne, Florida, of the Vietnam Veterans Against the War. The idea was to use a shoulder-launched rocket to try to kill Nixon in his living room. And then secondarily, when that collapsed, a plan to shoot him at a Veterans of Foreign War convention where he was speaking, which collapsed only when Ed Kaiser, the contract killer hired by the CIA, backed out at the last minute when he learned who the target would be. And then ultimately, without filibustering here, I think there's solid evidence the CIA learned about and infiltrated the Watergate break-in in order to sabotage it, in order to ensure that the burglars were caught.
You know, in Catherine Timpf, I think, in National Review, just put out an article that said if the Watergate scandal had happened now, people might not only really care about it or even notice it, and that you point that out in your new book. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think, of course, that a lot of that has to do with how media has changed. I mean, if you think back on it,
boy, how true.
When the Senate Watergate Committee hearings were going on, well, we only had three television networks at that time, and everybody was riveted to the TV for days for these gavel-to-gavel hearings. Let's look now, for example, at Fast and Furious. It came Fast and Furious. It was in the news for one day, maybe two, and then it was over. So the media moves so fast now. There are so many media outlets with content that no scandal sticks around for very long, and one scandal very quickly gets surpassed by the latest scandal, the scandal du jour. Then you just look at the scope of it. In other words, okay, Nixon's men, it's not clear that he had any prior knowledge or approval, broke into a rival's headquarters and bugged the place. Good God, Barack Obama is wiretapping the entire country. We're spying on reporters. We're spying on private citizens. We're reading emails. And where is the public outrage? There seems to be no public outrage.
Mr. Stone called Sabatino. The question I have and raised in your book, but not explained in great detail, is there's a time lapse here. Now we're looking at 2014. We're in the 21st century. Is the same military-industrial complex, in your opinion? We know what the NSA is doing, and which is in many ways eclipsed the CIA. What do you see as this second tier of military thinkers, military-industrial complex people? What are they doing? What, in your opinion, is going on right now as we speak?
Well, you would like to think that with the election of Obama that the neocons are in eclipse. I mean, I would point out to you that after the removal of Richard Nixon, although Henry Kissinger is still by title the Secretary of State, Donald Rumsfeld and his deputy Dick Cheney really neuter him. It is the end of detente. In the Ford administration. Now, the neocons make a tremendous comeback under George W. Bush, and Barack Obama promises the country a different direction. But in reality, we're still at war in the same place as we were at war. We still have the Patriot Act. We are still spying on citizens. I mean, in truth, the real policy differences between George W. Bush and Barack Obama are non-existent. And therefore, I would argue that it's the same old folks doing the same old thing, which is why we're embroiled in a number of foreign wars without congressional approval. By the way, remember, that was one of the articles of impeachment against Nixon. He bombed Cambodia without the approval of Congress. Congress hasn't approved our bombings in Iraq, for example. So I still think that we have hardliners in the Pentagon, hardliners in the NSA, and I still think they are driving foreign policy, defense policy, despite the rhetoric of the current president.
Yeah, but who's running the madhouse, sir? Who's running the madhouse?
Well, I don't think it's a person. I think it's institutions. I don't think you can point to one guy, but it depends. It doesn't seem to matter who the president is. The policies remain the same. I mean, we have this secret FISA, you know, the secret court that supposedly has to approve surveillance of American citizens. Well, they have yet to turn down a single government request. They turn the whole concept of probable cause on its head. The government can now spy on anyone they want without a warrant. And that is deeply troubling.
Mr. Stone, you in your book, you also say, I'm going to take us back into history. There was an 18-and-a-half-minute gap in the White House tapes to explain, and you explain in there who erased that section. Who is that and why?
Well, first of all, it's not really one 18-and-a-half-minute gap. There's a 5-minute erasure at the beginning, which has a very loud hum, if you want to listen to it, which presumably is caused by the electrical socket in the office of Rosemary Woods. She is Nixon's longtime personal secretary, and she cops to the first 5 minutes. And I believe it really is an accident. She goes immediately to Nixon's lawyers, Fred Bazart and to General Alexander Haig, the chief of staff, and she says, I've made this terrible mistake. They tell her not to worry about it because it's on a tape that is not subpoenaed. That turns out to be wrong. Then the tapes are in the custody of General Haig. Then simultaneously, according to Bob Woodward's book, Deep Throat, whoever that is, goes to Woodward and says, there's a deliberate erasure on the tapes. Well, then when the tapes go to the Senate Watergate Committee several days later, there's two additional erasures totaling an additional 13 and a half minutes. No loud hum, meaning they were done in a different location.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that Alexander Haig, whose real loyalty is to the hardliners in the Pentagon, and Fred Bazart, who is Nixon's lawyer but formerly the general counsel of the DOD, I believe that they are the perpetrators of the tape. Now, what was on the erasure? I think it's innocuous. It's not what's on the erasure so much as it is the erasure itself that causes the firestorm that brings Nixon down.
You know, Mr. Stone, we've got only maybe a minute left here, and I'd like to ask you within 30 seconds, where is America going today, based upon what you've seen in the past and what you hope to be for the future?
Well, we're facing a very formidable enemy. We were told only months ago, it seems, less than a year ago, that Al-Qaeda had, we've broken the back of Al-Qaeda. Now we have, it seems to me, terrorists with passports to come here.
20 seconds.
I fear for my country, but because I'm an American, I am still a pessimist. I think we're going to have to get tough. We're going to need new policies.
All right. Roger Stone, thank you very much. The book is Nixon's Secrets. Highly recommended. It's fascinating reading. Thank you very much for being a guest on Smith Sabatino.
Thank you, Mr. Stone.
Many thanks.
This is called Sabatino with Roland Smith as we continue on. Thank you. We're back.
America Weekend.
Now, Cheap Psych Tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Is your young child refusing to go to school? This can be a challenging problem. Here's the developmental science of it. Formerly called school phobic, today these children are more appropriately called school refusers. About 5% of all children referred to clinics. These children will do everything to avoid school, from nervousness to tantrums to headaches to intense anxiety. This kid will tax even the best parent. Bribes, threats, and pressures do not work. What's the cheap psychological trick? Get the kid back in school as quickly as you can. Do not give in. And while teachers are adept at helping parents solve this problem, some professional assistance may be in order. The school refuser will push every button a parent has. You may want to give in, but resist this temptation. Get help. Got a parenting question? Contact me at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MYTV.
Order in the court.
This is Attorney Jay Coleman with the final verdict. Chesty Love is a professional exotic dancer. According to her last 10 years of IRS tax returns, she is a self-employed business owner who works as a contractor for clubs and parties. On this year's returns, Chesty Love tried to deduct her recent breast implants as a business-related expense. Do you think the IRS will approve this deduction? The final verdict after this.
Don't try to fight the IRS on your own. Use Coast One Financial Group and let them help you get a fresh start. Dial 877-219-8780.
Generally, breast implants are not deductible, but Chesty Love had a long record of income as an exotic dancer, so her deduction was allowed because her implants were incurred solely to further her business career. And that's the final verdict.